morning to you, sir. And you are Mr.?
Michael Kozlik.
Good morning to you, Mr. Kozlik.
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. I'm here on behalf of the appellant to ask this court to reverse the court order in the county court for the failure of the evidence. Also, the order in some parts was outside the scope of their jurisdiction. It included trust matters, whereas this case was only a probate matter. It also took into account personal transactions between individuals not relating to the estate. Further, it's contrary to law. We ask the case not only be that the order in total be reversed, but also be assigned to a new judge. The bill of exceptions shows that there's a carryover from the trust case to the probate case, and that carryover, unfortunately, is not the basis of the order. But yet there's discussion of said amount, you know, what's going on.
Counsel, there. Did you ask that it be reassigned to a new judge?
We have not yet, no.
Okay. Counsel, also, the hearing on December 2nd, 2014, what was that hearing for? What was the purpose of that hearing?
The purpose of the hearing was to approve a final accounting of the, approve the final accounting for complete settlement and determine the heirs of the estate. And also to indicate what is to be delivered and distributed. It also was to discharge the personal representative. In other words, it was a formal conclusion to the underlying probate matter.
Okay, so it was not a trial on your claim of conversion by Kevin in this case.
Well, that matter was brought up. That was brought before the court. And what happened is, they presented an accounting, and in the stipulation, the matter of whether or not there was a conversion of the multi-party account was part of what was considered. That was considered by and through the stipulation entering in the account agreement with respect to the account.
So was it considered in the context of a trial on a conversion claim the estate would have against Kevin, or was it considered in the context of whether or not the accounting and inventory should be approved in the petition for formal settlement?
It was tried with respect to in the answer that the appellant had filed.
So it's your contention an answer is good enough
to raise the issue,
to put it before the court to try it?
That's right.
Okay.
It was raised in the issue in paragraph 9 in the answer.
Okay.
Was there any action to remove the personal representative?
No.
So
this was purely to determine whether or not the accounting would be approved and whether or not the personal representative, Kevin, had authority to make distribution in accordance with what he proposed.
But the allegations were that the accounting was not accurate because of the prior distribution by Kevin for the vehicle, is that correct?
That's correct. That's true.
Okay.
Is the question about the ownership of the multi-party account a question of law?
I believe it is a question of law, but I think it also goes to a question of fact. As to the question of law, the multi-party account agreement conforms to that that is stated in the statute. All parties have stipulated to that. When you look at the multi-party account agreement and the statute, if you wanted to have rights of survivorship, there was a line there. A box had to be checked, and there had to be an initialing. There was no initialing.
Yeah, I guess what I'm not hearing any dispute of the facts about that. Are you contending there is a dispute of fact?
There is no dispute of the fact. But
so then it becomes a question of law, doesn't it?
It becomes a question of law, correct. Whether or not that account agreement had rights of survivorship. Joint tenancies are not favored in the law. In fact, they're disfavored. This court has, by and large, tried to find reasons not to allow joint tenancies.
So you've argued that because of that, they needed strict compliance with the requirements.
Correct.
In order
That's
to create
true.
The joint tenancy.
That's true.
Or other evidence. Other evidence of an indication that the owners, plural,
correct,
wanted with rights of survivorship.
Well, I believe that you have to, that other evidence would come outside of the actual account agreement. when you do not comply with the formalities of the account agreement by indicating what rights of survivorship, those rights of survivorship do not attach. This court has previously found that you can't have a joint account without rights of survivorship.
So the box was checked, and the document was signed.
But it was not initialed.
It was not initialed.
Correct.
Next to the checkbox.
And the intention of the legislature is there, they want to make sure that the person clearly knows the effect of what they're doing.
Counsel, you stipulated the form complied with the statute, so if it complied with the statute, then doesn't it become an issue of whether or not the contract was ambiguous?
No.
Doesn't the statute say substantially in this form?
Rather
than exactly in this form?
With regard to this particular statute, I think it's 19 in that particular area of the law.
Mm-hmm.
It states clearly that if that form, as set out in the statute, is used, then these are the results. It logically follows. A separate statute, not applicable here, says that if you're not using that form, then you determine whether or not it substantially complies. This one is in the exact form as stated in the statute.
Putting aside the multiple party account issue and assuming that the determination of heirs is modified to determine that the two children are the heirs at law, where is there any prejudice to your client on the other issues that are raised in your brief?
The other issues in our assignment of heir, there were checks that were issued by Kevin and Sarah individually over to my client. They want to take a set off out of the trust and or the estate for those payments. Those are separate transactions. The only thing before the court was determining the distribution out of the intestate estate. There's nothing in the record saying my client agreed that that was a gift. There's no evidence it was a gift. The court is left to speculate as to why those transactions were made. In fact, when you look at the actual, the stipulation states that the insurance was, that Kevin was the exact and only beneficiary of the insurance, but yet the order says it was half and half. If it's half and half, there's no setup. Sorry, my time is up.
No, that's just your problem.
If you would have any further questions.
Well, I guess I'm still not hearing what the prejudice is other than some sort of technicality. If he ended up with the half of the proceeds that he was supposed to end up with, where's the prejudice?
The prejudice is that there's no law that authorizes a set-off for what he's entitled out of the trust or out of the estate by virtue of any payments that were made by Kevin and Sarah or my client. We're left to speculate as to why those payments were made.
Is that before us? Is there a request for set-off?
It's in the accounting. It was approved. The set-off was approved by the trial court.
Well, technically, the payments of life insurance wouldn't even have been part of the estate at all anyway, would they?
That's correct. That's a non-probate transfer.
So both the receipt in and the disbursements out of the private accounts are extraneous to the estate.
Correct.
But yet, if one accepts those facts, he was entitled to half the insurance proceeds, and he got half the insurance proceeds.
But
so where's the prejudice?
The fact that was stipulated to is that he was not entitled to the half.
Okay.
Counsel, one last question. Since the judge made no findings on your claim of conversion, how do we know what to do with that based on the record in front of us?
Well, I believe that if you take a look at there wasn't a finding of fact.
She simply signed a proposed order that was submitted, but there's no discussion one way or the other about the conversion claim.
That is true, but with regard to...
So again, based on the record, what do we do with that?
We're alleging that the court erred in not including it. It was brought before the court by virtue of the stipulation and was brought before the court with respect to our answer.
Well, but don't you have some obligation to ask the court to rule on that when there's a proposed order that's going to be entered by the court?
Well, the judge was trying to run out the door and take everything under advisement. But if you look at the actual accounting that's attached, there are several matters in here that were approved, and there's no evidence in the record to say that that is the fact, or these amounts were even actually paid, or what they were for. This court, as it stated in the State of Cooper, when there's no evidence to support the order, it's reversed.
Okay. Thank you for answering my question. I appreciate it, sir.
I only have 6 seconds left. We believe that it was erroneous also to include Sarah as a heir. There's no evidence that she's a child of the decedent. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. McGinn, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning. William McGinn, appearing for Appley in this case. I would point out, and a lot of it is in our brief, that this matter did involve an evidentiary hearing. Unfortunately, there was no record kept. Apparently, as we say in Douglas County, nobody pushed the button, unfortunately. So there was a time when the judge did not simply take a proposed order, run out of the courtroom, and take it under advisement. This was a distribution that was approved after presentation of evidence, the testimony of Kevin Bowden.
Counsel, in your brief, you twice say that these orders are retrospective in nature, but I got to be honest, I don't understand what that means.
It's basically, these are orders that were done after a hearing, and it's kind of the whole retrospective nature.
How does that make them valid? Just because they were rendered after a hearing, how does that make them valid orders?
Because they were done after after testimony, after both sides were allowed to present witnesses and present evidence. It also involved the trust proceeds. There was actually separate lawsuits filed that were dismissed. Eventually, everything was brought together before one hearing with one matter in front of Judge Hendricks. So she heard evidence based on the entire transactions, which was essentially the testimony of Kevin Bowman. So that and the proposed orders and the court file is what she based her decision on when she approved the accounting.
What do we do with the conversion claim since the court made no findings of fact one way or the other on that?
Well, the conversion claims would either what the judge did is the judge basically approved, found that there was no wrongful conversion, that those either happened outside of the jurisdiction because they happened before the death of the testator and the decedent, and those that were done were appropriate based on the plan of distribution and the testimony she heard from the...
But based on the record, how do we know that? Aren't you just assuming that?
I'm making that assumption because I was there for the hearing. I think what we have to do is, if the court is not comfortable affirming that, then what we may have to do is remand down and have the judge... We produce the personal representative and have him testify.
Well, if there were a conversion, wouldn't the result of this case be different?
What we're asking for, the only thing that we're asking for, is that basically to simplify things, everything was split up except for the insurance policy. And it was Kevin Valvin's, the personal representative's opinion or position that he had an insurance policy where he was the beneficiary. He paid that not knowing what he was supposed to do with that. He gave half to his brother. He was asking for a credit back against that.
Counsel, in your accounting, though, mm-hmm. on the order, I assume you prepared it, is that correct?
Correct.
You have listed specifically that they're both co-beneficiaries of the life insurance, but in the stipulation of facts, it says only Kevin is.
Correct.
Which is controlling for us, the stipulation or the order?
It would be the stipulation. That would be Kevin's. Well,
so the order is wrong. They were not co-beneficiaries.
They were not co-beneficiaries.
Okay.
Yes. So anyway, the rest of it is that what we were asking is essentially after you look at the distribution that was approved by the court. And any evidence that we would have, there doesn't appear to be any evidence that would show that there's any reason to change that distribution, and we're just asking that the court's decision be approved. Do you have any questions?
What about the account at Mutual that was allegedly a multi-party account with right of survivorship, but there was no initialing of that section as required by statute?
Yeah, it was our position that it substantially, it meets the requirements because it's a substantial compliance. It was reviewed, it was read, it just wasn't initialed and that wasn't filed.
Well, but anybody could put a check on this spot.
And anybody could put an initial to it as well. Because the signature is what is really important.
Well, but the signature would kind of match the initials, wouldn't it?
It could.
So that's a question of law, whether it's substantial compliance or strict compliance?
Yeah, it's question, well, whether it's strict compliance or substantial compliance, I think that's up to the trial court. So that would be a question of fact.
So, was there, in the hearing you're talking about where there apparently was no record, were these issues discussed? Was there evidence presented, for example, in regard to the bank accounts?
Yes. Kevin Bellman testified as to what happened with all those accounts.
But that's not before us, is it?
Right. Because there's no record.
Yeah. The only thing we have is the stipulation and the exhibits attached. And then your brief arguments to the judge, that's it, isn't
that's it?
You said that whether they complied with the survivorship account requirement was a question of fact?
Yes, because it's determined, or the trial judge determined whether or not this was in compliance.
The amended inventory has $27,000 transferred during decedent's life.
Right.
That's the vehicle, is that right?
That's correct.
So that was listed on the amended inventory?
Yes, it was.
So was that approved by the probate court?
That was approved by the probate court, yes.
So how does that affect the conversion plan?
Well, that was because that transfer took place within close to the time of death of the decedent. It's not really conversion. It was the transfer of the vehicle was titled in the name of George L. Bellman Sr. and Kevin Bellman.
Counsel. So it was an asset of the estate.
Yes.
And it was transferred. It was divided as part of the estate. Is that
yes,
correct?
But the division that would have gone to Kevin Bellman.
And why was that?
What's that? Why because was it? True, because it was titled in his name.
Okay, but the value was split.
Correct.
The physical item was given to Kevin.
Yes.
But the value was split between the two brothers. Is that correct?
I believe is what happened.
Well, that's how the court would have approved the amended inventory.
Right.
So the conversion claim was, in essence, dealt with.
Counsel, if there had been an actual conversion trial, wouldn't you have had the burden of proof by statute, by clear and convincing evidence that since you stipulated that all the funds in that account were George Sr.'s, wouldn't you have the burden by clear and convincing to show otherwise that, in other words, he intended it to be a gift or something since... Kevin did not contribute to that account. Would you have actually had the burden at trial?
I believe we would have, Your Honor.
Okay. Did you present any evidence on that?
Yeah, the testimony of Kevin Bellman.
Okay, but again, we don't have that testimony.
Correct.
Okay.
Is the absence of the record an impediment to our full consideration of this appeal?
I believe it is, Your Honor.
What should we do about that?
Remand it and have a hearing before Judge Hendricks.
Or someone else?
Or someone else.
Okay. Thank you.
Unless there are any more questions, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
He is over.
No time for rebuttal. That concludes arguments for today. The court is adjourned and you are excused.